Right now, there is this hidden tax quietly eating up to 60 basis points of your revenue.
Yeah, and it will never actually appear on a processor invoice.
No, it does not. It does not show up on your monthly statement either. So today we are looking squarely at how payment reserves are, weaponized against growing merchants. Welcome to this deep dive.
That'd be here for this one.
If you are listening to this right now, you are a U.S. merchant processing, well, anywhere between $25,000 and $5 million a month in credit card volume.
Right, that is the exact target.
And we are putting you right in the middle of a strategy session with two operators at MyPayAdvisor. We are breaking down the 2026 processing landscape.
Because, I mean, you might look at your merchant agreement and think you secured a really great flat rate.
Oh, yeah. Like
Right.
maybe you are paying 2.9% plus 30 cents a transaction, which, that looks very clean on paper.
So that's great.
But if you have a payment reserve written into your contract, your true cost of processing is dramatically higher than that printed number.
That is the reality we see on the front lines every single day. The headline rate they sell you, it is really just the starting point.
Right.
The real story and, the real cost to your business is hidden right in your working capital.
That is exactly what we are tackling today. The goal of this deep dive is to map out the exact working capital impact of those payment reserves.
Yeah, we have a look at the math.
We will walk through the core takeaways you need to understand, and then we're going to build a concrete operator playbook for you to execute on Monday morning.
I love that.
But before we get into the heavy math, let's establish a clear definition. Like, what exactly is a payment reserve in the context of 2026?
Well, a payment reserve is fundamentally just processor withheld cash. It is typically 5 to 20% of your total daily credit card volume.
Wow, up to 20%.
Yeah, the processor just skims that money straight off the top of your daily settlement, and they hold it for anywhere from 90 to 365 days.
That is a long time.
It really
Yeah.
is. Now, legally, that money still belongs to you, right? It sits as an asset on your balance sheet.
Okay, but I am guessing there is a catch.
A huge catch.
Right.
It is completely illiquid. You cannot spend it on inventory. You cannot use it to make payroll.
Right.
You cannot even pledge it as collateral against a bank loan. It is entirely frozen by the processor.
Man, the closest analogy I can think of is like renting a commercial space. A payment reserve is like handing over a security deposit to your landlord.
Yeah, that is a good way to look at it.
But in this bizarre scenario, the landlord keeps taking an extra piece of your paycheck every single month to add to that deposit.
Exactly.
And to make it worse, you do not actually know the specific date you will get that cash back.
That is a very functional comparison, actually.
Lisa.
And since we are dealing with a financial landlord who, holds all the cards, we need to understand the mechanical structures they use to trap this cash.
Right, we have to know how the trap works before we can calculate the financial damage.
Exactly.
So let's break down those structures. If I am looking at a stack of merchant agreements, what are the actual reserve models I am going to see in the wild?
So there are three main types of reserves written into contracts right now. The first, and by far the most common, is the rolling reserve.
Okay, rolling reserve.
Yeah, this is where the processor withholds a fixed percentage of every single daily settlement batch.
So every day.
Every single day. If you process $10,000 on a Tuesday and you have a 10% rolling reserve, they keep $1,000.
And they wire you $9,000?
Right, they wire you nine, they keep one. They do that every single day.
Wait, so if I run a massive Black Friday promotion, right, and I process $100,000 in a single weekend, they just blindly scoop $10,000 right out of my peak cash flow.
They totally do. The withhold scales perfectly with your volume.
Oh,
That
man.
money just rolls forward.
Yeah.
So month one's withhold does not release until month seven, assuming you have a 180-day hold.
That is painful.
Okay.
Okay, what is the second type?
Second type is a bit different. It is called a capped reserve. Right. The initial withhold logic is the same. They take a percentage of your daily batches, but it only continues until a fixed dollar ceiling is reached.
Okay, how do they actually calculate that ceiling?
That ceiling is usually calculated as a multiple of your monthly chargeback exposure. Let's say your cap is $50,000.
Okay.
Once your withheld funds hit that exact $50,000 mark, the withholding just stops.
So you start getting 100% of your daily settlements again.
Exactly. The only time they start withholding again is if, a customer chargeback drops your reserve balance below that $50,000 cap.
Oh, I see. So they just top it off when necessary to maintain the cushion.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, that
Yeah.
sounds slightly better than an endless rolling reserve. What is the third structure?
The third is the upfront reserve. And this one is a massive lump sum requirement.
A lump sum.
Yeah. When you open the account, The processor either deducts a huge chunk from your very first few weeks of settlements to fund it, or they require you to wire the cash directly from your operating account.
Before they even turn it on.
Before they will even turn on the gateway.
Wow. Wiring cash just for the privilege of processing payments sounds brutal for a growing company's cash flow.
It really is.
Why do processors insist on taking this money in the first place?
Well, they do it entirely to cover their own financial exposure. Processors are essentially extending you a line of credit.
Right, because of chargebacks.
Exactly. They are on the hook to the card networks if your business fails. If you experience high chargebacks or issue a massive wave of refunds or get hit by organized fraud,
they need a cushion.
They need a cash cushion. If your operating account is totally empty when Visa comes looking for that money, the processor has to pay it out of their own pocket.
Okay, but are they just guessing at that risk, or is there hard data driving these policies?
It is heavily data-driven. Processors track all sorts of macroeconomic indicators. The Federal Reserve Payment Study is a major source for them.
Okay.
That study monitors unauthorized transaction rates and fraud trends across the entire U.S. card system.
So when fraud goes up, they clamp down.
Exactly. When the Fed data shows an uptick in e-commerce fraud, processors tighten their underwriting across the board. That macro data really dictates how much risk they believe they're carrying on behalf of smaller merchants.
Okay, I understand the need for a cushion, but here is where I really want to push back on the time frame.
Okay.
Why does the hold period always seem to default to exactly 180 days? If a customer buys a t-shirt from me, right, and 60 days go by without a complaint, that transaction is clearly fine.
Right.
Why lock up that specific batch of funds for another 4 whole months?
Yeah, that is a very fair question from an operator perspective. The 180-day rule actually comes directly from the network guidelines.
Like Visa and MasterCard.
Yes. Visa publishes their core rules, and MasterCard has their own specific dispute guidelines. For most dispute reason codes, a consumer has 120 days from the transaction date to file a chargeback.
120 days.
Or sometimes it is 120 days from the date of delivery.
Okay, so that explains 120 days, but where do the extra 60 days come from?
The processors add an administrative buffer.
Of course they do.
Right. Because once a customer initiates a dispute on, say, day 119, it takes time for the issuing bank to communicate with the acquiring bank.
So paperwork delays.
Basically. It takes time to process the paperwork and formally debit the processor. So they tack on 60 days to ensure every single potential liability window has completely closed before they hand your cash back.
Okay, that makes mechanical sense, even if it hurts. But earlier you said this money sits on my balance sheet, but I can't touch it.
Correct.
Where does that cash actually sit in the real world? And more importantly, who is making the yield on it?
That is the multi-million dollar question. Those funds sit in a non-interest-bearing account under your name.
Non-interest-bearing?
Yep. That account is completely controlled by the processor or their sponsor bank. You earn 0% interest on that locked cash.
Let me guess. The processor is not earning 0%.
Not even close. And we can track this clearly. If you pull the 10K filings from publicly traded processors, you can look right at their balance sheets. Yeah, and you can cross-reference those filings with data from the Nilson Report.
The Nilson Report, okay.
Right. It is the leading industry newsletter that ranks the largest U.S. merchant acquirers by purchase volume. When you look at the top-tier firms on that list, they are collectively holding billions of dollars in restricted merchant cash.
Billions? And they are sweeping that cash into overnight investments.
Exactly. They earn what is called the net interest margin.
Right, the spread.
Yes, the spread between what they pay you for the deposit, which is zero.
Zero.
And what they earn by investing that massive pool of float in safe, short-term instruments, they generate a massive return and they keep 100% of the profit.
Well, since they are earning yield on your trapped cash, we have to transition into the math here.
Let's do it.
We need to look at how this setup actively penalizes your business growth, because it is not just an inconvenience, you know, it is a mathematical penalty.
It really is. The math fully exposes the reality of the situation.
Let's run the numbers on a real-world 2026 example to make this tangible for everyone listening. Okay. Imagine a direct-to-consumer supplement brand. They are currently processing $400,000 a month in credit card volume.
Good size.
Yeah. And their average order value is $58. They signed up for a processor offering a simple flat rate plan.
Right. The classic flat rate.
Exactly. They pay 2.9% plus 30 cents per transaction. But buried in the contract is a 10% rolling reserve with a 180-day hold. Walk us through the steady state calculation for this specific merchant.
Sure. Let's trace the dollars. They process $400,000 this month. 10% of that is $40,000.
Okay.
So the processor withholds $40,000 because it is a 180-day hold, which is, you know, 6 full months. That monthly $40,000 just piles up before the very first dollar is ever released back to their operating account.
Right. So month one's money does not unlock until the start of month seven.
Precisely. So you multiply that $40,000 by 6 months.
That is $240,000.
Right. That builds to a steady state locked balance of $240,000. That is nearly $250,000 of their own revenue, permanently frozen as long as their sales volume stays flat.
That is wild. And here is a better analogy for what happens when they actually succeed.
Okay.
Having a rolling reserve is like being required to keep a minimum balance in a checking account, but that balance constantly scales with your income.
Ooh, that is a good way to put it.
Yeah, like if you get a raise at work, the bank immediately freezes a chunk of your new paycheck to arbitrarily increase your minimum balance requirement.
Yes.
So let's say the supplement brand has a huge quarter. They launch a new product line and grow their sales by 25%.
Awesome.
Right. They are now processing $500,000 a month. What happens to their working capital?
Well, the penalty for their success is immediate.
Right.
At $500,000 a month in volume, that 10% withhold jumps to $50,000 a month.
Wow.
Over a six-month rolling period, their locked cash balance balloons from $240,000 up to $300,000.
So their top line revenue went up, but their accessible cash just got way tighter.
Yep.
They just trapped another $60,000 of their own working capital just by growing their business.
That is the compound growth trap. You need more cash to buy inventory to support $500,000 in sales, but the processor just locked your cash away. You are forced to find that money somewhere else.
Which brings us to the true cost of capital. We have to price that locked money because, well, it is not free.
We really do. If your standard internal cost of capital is 12%, carrying that $240,000 steady state balance is costing your business $28,800 a year in lost opportunity.
Just gone.
But it gets much worse if you have to actively borrow to replace that cash just to fund your daily operations.
Let's say they pull from a working capital line of credit. A standard rate right now might be 16%.
Okay. If you use a 16% line of credit to cover that $240,000 shortfall, that locked balance is now costing you $38,400 every single year in hard cash interest payments to your bank.
This is the hidden basis points calculation I mentioned at the top of the show. I really want to highlight this clearly.
It is the most important part.
Right. We have the stated processing fees. Processing $400,000 a month at 2.9% plus 30 cents per transaction comes out to roughly $164,000 a year in standard fees.
That is invoice cost.
But when you add that $38,400 carrying cost from the line of credit on top of those headline fees, the equation just breaks.
Quickly.
The effective all-in cost for this merchant is no longer 2.9%.
Right.
When you divide the total financial pain by their volume, it jumps to roughly 3.45%.
Exactly.
The payment reserve quietly added 55 basis points to their true processing rate.
And you will never see those 55 basis points printed on a processor's invoice.
Never.
They exist purely on your profit and loss statement under financing cost. The processor effectively shifted their risk cost directly onto your balance sheet.
It is an invisible tax, and the math proves exactly how expensive a standard reserve is in a static environment.
Right.
But we know the real world is not static. Since processors use these really subjective legal clauses to trap your cash, you cannot just look at the math. You have to look at the contract trap.
The fine print.
Yeah, we have to examine how processors legally extend these holds and just change the rules in the middle of the game.
The single biggest threat in any merchant agreement is open-ended language.
For sure.
A merchant reads their contract during onboarding.
Right.
They see the number 180 days.
And they plan around that.
Exactly. They build their entire 12-month cash flow model around that exact timeline. But they fail to read the surrounding legal clauses.
Okay, what do those clauses actually say in plain English?
They typically include a paragraph giving the processor, quote, sole discretion, unquote, or unilateral authority to extend the hold.
Unilateral authority.
Yes. They can do this based on a sudden spike in your processing volume. They can do it based on a routine internal underwriting review.
Wow.
They can even do it if your refund rate ticks upward by a tiny fraction of a percent. In practice, because of this sole discretion clause, a stated 180-day hold very often just becomes an indefinite hold.
That is a terrifying scenario for an operator.
It is a nightmare.
You think $40,000 is finally releasing in July to fund your Q3 inventory and the processor just decides to hold it until December? Do they even have to tell you?
Often, they do not even send an email.
You are kidding.
No, you just log into your portal and notice the daily settlement is suspiciously light. And beyond subjective reviews, there are hard automated threshold triggers you need to watch out for.
Like the network chargeback program.
Yes. Visa and MasterCard operate massive, excessive chargeback programs. These are automated monitoring systems looking at every single merchant account globally.
Okay.
If your dispute ratio crosses their published threshold, which is generally 0.9 to 1.5% of your total transaction count, and you hit 100 or more disputes in a single month, major alarms go off.
And when that automated alarm goes off, how does the processor react?
They react instantly and very aggressively.
Yeah.
Under the terms of the agreement, they will often double your rolling reserve percentage overnight.
Overnight.
Or they will extend the hold period from 180 days to a full 365 days.
A whole year.
Yep.
And they are legally protected by the contract you signed to take these actions without even asking your permission.
Man, this raises a really important question about the worst case scenario. Let's talk about termination.
Okay.
Say things go completely sideways. Your chargebacks spike, you get terminated for cause by your processor, and you land on the MTCH list.
Right, the MTCH list.
Just to clarify for the listener, the MTCH list is basically a global blacklist for merchants maintained by MasterCard. If you get put on it, it is incredibly hard to get a new processing account anywhere.
Nearly impossible.
But if you get terminated, the relationship is over. Does the processor finally close the account and wire you your reserve balance?
They do not.
Are you serious?
Yes. If you land in MTCH list limbo, your original processor has the legal right to hold your entire reserve for the full 180-day chargeback window.
Wait, if my account is closed, I cannot process any new transactions. Why do they get to keep the money if the terminal is shut off?
Because of delayed liability.
Oh, right.
Chargebacks are retroactive. Remember, a customer has 120 days from the date of delivery to file a dispute. Just because your account was shut down today does not mean a customer from 3 months ago cannot wake up tomorrow and dispute a transaction.
Okay, that makes sense.
The processor is still legally on the hook to Visa and MasterCard for all your past volume. So they freeze your cash to cover that lingering tail risk.
So your money just sits there, frozen solid while you were scrambling. And the operational pain compounds, because now you have to go find a high-risk processor just to keep your checkout page functioning.
Exactly.
And those high-risk processors, they are going to charge massive setup fees and demand their own upfront cash reserves.
That is exactly what happens. Your old money is trapped by processor A, and you have to scrape together new money to hand to processor B just to keep the lights on.
That is insane.
It creates an immediate liquidity crisis for the business.
And just to add insult to injury here, we need to briefly touch on the hidden fees layered on top of the reserve itself.
Yes, the fee structure surrounding the reserve activity itself.
Because holding the money is not enough.
Right. Some processors are not satisfied just holding the float and earning the net interest margin. They actively charge you fees to manage your tracked money.
Of course they do.
You might see a monthly reserve maintenance fee. Or you might see a specific reserve release fee when they finally do send a batch of your money back.
I have audited a lot of merchant statements, and I rarely see those fees on page one. Where are they hiding them?
They almost never put them on the main statement. They show it in a separate reserve substatement.
That's substatement.
Yeah, it is a secondary PDF document buried deep in the reporting portal. Most operators never even bother to download it.
They just miss it.
They totally ignore it. And the processor quietly drains a few $100 a month from the locked balance.
Well, we have covered the mechanical reality here. We calculated the hidden basis points trap. We exposed the delayed liability of the MTCH list and the danger of sole discretion clauses.
It's a lot to take in.
It is. So now we have to transition into action. What exactly should a merchant do about this situation on Monday morning?
We need to put the operator playbook to work. It really comes down to four specific steps.
Okay. Step one is legal review. You need to pull your actual merchant agreement. And I do not mean the glossy marketing PDF your sales rep emailed you.
Right, not the brochure.
I mean the legally binding terms and conditions. Find the section labeled reserve, security, or holdback. Read every single word.
You have to.
Look for phrases like sole discretion or unilateral authority to modify terms. Because if that language exists, your stated 180-day hold period is merely a suggestion. You have zero certainty.
That is step one. Step two is financial modeling.
Modeling.
Yeah, you need to build a spreadsheet to model your locked capital over time. Do not just look at today's snapshot. Build a column for your current volume. Build a column for your projected 12-month volume. And build a third column for your 24-month projection.
You have to see the future impact.
Exactly. Calculate the exact dollar amount of the withhold at each growth stage. You need to see exactly how much cash this reserve will consume as your revenue scales.
Makes total sense. Step three is pricing the pain. Take the projected locked capital number from your spreadsheet and price it using your true working capital line rate.
Right.
If you borrow from a bank at 15%, multiply your locked balance by 15%. Convert that dollar amount of annual interest into basis points against your total processing volume.
You have to see it in basis points.
You have to see your real effective processing rate. You need the hard data to prove that your 2.9% flat rate is actually costing your business 3.5%.
Exactly. And step four is testing your current processor.
How do you do that?
Email your account representative and request a formal written release schedule. Ask them to provide a document with specific hard calendar dates and exact dollar amounts for the funds they are currently holding.
Okay, and if they refuse? Like, if they just say their system handles the releases automatically on a rolling basis?
Well, if they refuse to provide hard dates in writing, you have your answer. You know right then and there that they are treating your money as an open-ended hold.
Yeah. And since they're using subjective clauses to trap your cash, you cannot just accept the first draft of any future contract either.
Never.
You have the data, you know the true cost, now you have to negotiate. What is the precise order of operations for negotiating these terms?
You have to tackle the reserve in a very specific sequence. Do not try to fix the entire clause at once.
Okay.
First, negotiate the percentage. Try to get a 10% withhold reduced to 5%. That is the fastest way to put immediate cash back into your daily settlement.
Makes sense. Second, attack the time frame.
Right.
Push to shorten the hold period from 180 days to 90 days. That accelerates the return of your older funds.
Yeah.
And third, you have to strip out that subjective language.
Correct. You have to tighten the trigger language.
Yeah.
You must demand hard numbers. If they want the right to increase your reserve in the future, make them put specific chargeback ratios directly into the contract.
Like stating they can only increase the hold if your chargeback ratio exceeds 1.2% for two consecutive months.
Exactly. You strip away their subjective power and replace it with objective data.
Right.
And crucially, you must get all of these concessions in a formal contract amendment. Do not accept an email promise from a sales rep.
Oh, yeah.
An email promise means absolutely nothing when the underwriting department decides to freeze your account. It must be legally binding.
Well, we are going to leave you with a final thought to mull over as you build out your 2026 strategy. Let's say you do the math, you see the hidden costs, and you decide you are fed up.
Time for a change.
Right. You shop for a new processor. You get a quote from a direct acquirer offering transparent wholesale pricing. They offer you 1.7% interchange plus pricing. The key detail is that they require zero payment reserve.
Moving to a zero reserve environment completely changes your capital allocation model.
It really does. Now, a direct acquirer offering Interchange Plus might have a slightly higher upfront technical cost to integrate. It might require an extra week of developer time compared to your simple flat rate provider. But think about the math we just ran. Moving to that 1.7% setup and eliminating the reserve entirely could return $250,000 of your own money straight back to your operating cash flow.
That is cash that is sitting idle right now, generating zero return for your business while the processor profits from it.
So ask yourself this question today. How many new product lines could you launch? How many critical new hires could you fund right now if you singly stopped loaning your own revenue to your payment processor at 0% interest? Check your contracts, build your spreadsheet models, and take back control of your working capital.